another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went.
You can see. Hi, this is Jack Spirico with another edition of the Survival Podcast. One man's view of the changing world dictated on a 50-mile commute, either in the morning or in the afternoon, between Arlington and Frisco, Texas. Today you've got me in a morning commute, so I'm in my typical good morning mood. I haven't had the day beat down on me or 100-degree heat from the Texas sun yet, and so that keeps me nice and chipper. Last week I told you that when I got done with that financial advisory podcast, this week I was going to do something on heirloom seeds and gardening with heirloom vegetables and seed saving and planning for the future with that. Doing some small-scale permaculture, maybe in urban environments with that type of mentality. Being able to not only grow your own food, but be able to save your seeds and do it again next year and next year and next year until Monsanto decides that they own every seed on the planet, which may not be too far off. However, on Friday afternoon, someone sent me a special report, which I will link to from the blog post that goes with this podcast. You will find at thesurvivalpodcast.com. If you found me on iTunes and haven't been to the site yet, I do recommend you drop by again. It is thesurvivalpodcast.com. And, you know, get involved with the podcast. Leave me comments on individual episodes. Send me something from my contact form. Do whatever you want. And get in touch with me and let me know what's going on. Well, anyway, somebody sent me a report. The story that was on a site I like to frequent once in a while called Mix. And it talked about a new accounting requirement and its impact that it's had on financial institutions. And when I read it, I thought maybe it hadn't kicked in yet, and I started researching, I realized it had, and that it was already affecting earnings reports for banks, and that there's some kind of voodoo still left in this system, and when I heard about this, I decided I had to do a show that talked about it. It wasn't long enough for a whole show, but it doesn't fit with heirloom vegetables. And this article was called Five Dominoes That No One's Told You About. And when I read it, I only really saw three in it. And so I've taken two of them. One is this FAS-57, and the other one's commercial real estate. And I've added four more of my own. So I'm going to talk about six dominoes coming with the economy. And we'll do that heirloom vegetable gardening and urban permaculture podcast coming in the near future. However, there's one more thing I want to cover before I go forward. I made you guys a promise that when we hit 100 listeners, and we've stayed above 100 on the feed burner stats, which kind of ebbs and flows as people turn on their feed reader on or off, but I've seen it go as high as 170 down and back down to 100 today. Guess not a lot of people listen on Sundays. That I would roll out a program for you guys to help me. I'm going to put full details on the site. You just go to the site and click on Listener Appreciation Program, and you'll see that I have a plan there to grow the listener base to 1,000 listeners. My goal is to do that by September 1st. Here's what I'm going to do. If you participate in this program on any level, you'll go into a drawing. It's part of that drawing. All you have to do is fulfill one of these few things, and it's going to be on the honor system, so you can cheat. Please don't. And when we hit 1,000 listeners, I will give some member that's participated an 8-gig iPod Nano for free. I will send it directly to your home, drop ship it to you. You will tell me what color you want out of the ones that are commonly available. I will go out and find you one in that color and have it shipped directly to you. Now, here's the bonus side of this. The bonus number one is that if we hit 1,000 listeners before September 1st, and you know what? I'm going to make this even cooler. I'm going to set the date for October 1st. All right, that's going to give us an extra month to do this in. If we hit it by before October 1st, I will do a drawing and I will give away one. And I will continue the program through to October 1st. I will give away a second one. And I don't care if we hit it on, you know, September 29th, and a couple days later, October 1st comes around, I'm giving out two Nanos. Bonus number three is I'm going to find some other stuff that's not quite as pricey, and I'm going to try to give out, you know, half a dozen other little bonus gimmicks, whatever I can, to get you guys involved. I'm going to go ahead and post a link on the site that explains the program and what you can do, and I'll keep giving you more details about it. But basically, all I want you to do is tell people about the Survival Podcast. I don't care how you do it. I don't care if you talk to one person a week or one person a month and say, hey, man, check this guy out, this guy's show out. I'm getting a lot out of it. I don't care if you email some friends a link to it. If you go into a forum that you're already a member of, I don't want anybody spamming on my behalf here. Just people you know or people, communities you're already involved with, and discuss us, tell people about us, and let people know about us. Do anything like that, and I'll give you some other ideas as we go on, and there's going to be a form where you can register and say, I'm participating, and that's all you got to do. I don't look for any proof of what you've done whatsoever. I believe in an honor system on this thing. I mean, you know, it just makes a lot of sense to me. If you're going to be tuning in every day, we're going to trust each other, I'm going to trust you to help me out. And we'll give away those nanos and possibly some other things. So that's our listener appreciation program that I've been yammering on about since the start. Now let's go into these six dominoes, these things that I believe could have a hugely negative impact on our economy going forward. And the thing about them is most of them have no hypotheticalness whatsoever. These are all things that are going to hit us. Whether I'm right or wrong, it's going to be about how hard. Okay, this first domino is what I learned about in this report. It's called FAS 157, and it's a Fair Accounting Standards ruling. And basically what this says, and I'm going to try to make this as simplistic as possible so that people really understand what's been going on. Up until November of 2007, financial institutions, insurance corporations, etc., would take these assets they have called Level 3 assets, where there are things that no one really talks about. There are things like insurance on debt, insurance policies against debt. There are things like, oh, all those nasty little subprime loans that are held collectively in these little groups, these little pockets. And they would say to their accountants, hey, you know what, just use a computer model, put a value on these things, because we can't really get a market price because there's not really a market for them. No one's standing in line to buy subprime loans right now. No one's really looking to buy insurance that we already own against a debt that's already looks bad. We can't really get a market price on a lot of these assets. So the geniuses in our government decided that was bad. And they're right, that was bad as far as I'm concerned. I'm a big proponent of FAS 157. I just think that we've made a real mess because we've let these guys do it the other way for a long time. So a lot of these losses that you're seeing from these banks aren't, you know, necessarily direct default, like the guy's not paying his mortgage losses or direct cash losses. What they are is these banks have had to start reporting the things that they own that they say are worth money, what they're really worth instead of what they think they're worth. In other words, they can't just decide that this one account is worth $200,000 when they can't sell it but for $40,000. They have to do what's called mark to market instead of mark to imagination, which is what they've been doing up till now. Now, so what we're seeing, and I think we're going to see more and more of the bottom drop out of this financial sector. A lot of people would say that FAS 57 has shown us the bottom because they've already had to use it in their reportings. You know, Bank of America had to use it in their earnings report we've been waiting for to come out today. They came out with a dividend, a 72 cents a share profit. Remember, I did a little bit on them. So everything looks good for Bank of America technically right now, and you're seeing the share price go up. Now, the problem that I have with all this is, one, I don't think we're done seeing the correction that comes from it yet, that we're going to continue to see more and more devaluation of assets. For your, you know, review, I submit that Freddie Mac still made out using this thing after FAS 157 was put in place. They took, you know, a loss that should have been like $21 billion, I'm not sure of the exact figure, but billions and billions of dollars, down to about $500 million 2 months ago before this big drop in their stock price. And the way they did it is they took a great deal of their assets that had normally been level 1 or level 2 assets, in fact, just about everything they owned, and they put it into level 3 so that they could put a different value on them. And they sheltered tens of billions of dollars, even under the new accounting practice of FAS 157. So while FAS 157 made everybody look like they lost more, things were so shady over at Freddie Mac that it made it look like they did better even though they were bad. What this tells me is that we're only scratching the surface with this new accounting requirement. And it might sound kind of boring, but basically what I'm telling you is that the banks on their balance sheets have their asset values overrated, inflated, higher than they really are. They're saying we own this much security to back our debt. And the amount of security they own isn't even close to what they're saying it is. And this is just one step in starting to uncover that. So my belief is the first domino isn't just FAS 157. It's as we start to get smarter as a country and demand more and more accountability from these people, from these lending institutions, from these insurance companies, and we start to realize how shady the accounting really is, we're going to make our government, and sometimes we do actually get our government to do things, and they'll be happy to do this because even though it's their fault they let it go on, they're going to be able to blame somebody else and say they did it, the evil executives did it, not us. So they're going to continue to dig into this, and we're going to see something that I think has been coming for a long time. We're going to start to find out what our banks really have in hard assets, how much money they really have versus how much debt they really have. And I think that's a really nasty, dark hole that we're going to go down into. And when we get down in there, I don't know how bad it's going to be, but I know it's not going to be good for our economy, specifically short term. That's one thing I want you to think about as I go through these. Most of these things will be good for us long term. They're just going to put a really big crisis in front of us before we can come back out the other side. The next big domino that could fall in our economy, in my view, is a combination of two really hotly debated, hot topic issues. And one that's kind of started to fade away already is weird as that is, as hot a topic as this was last year. The first piece of this domino is illegal immigration. And then the second piece of this domino is universal health care. Now, whether you support McCain or Obama, I've told you before, I don't think there's as much difference between the two of them as people seem to think as far as what they're actually going to do. What they say is vastly different. What they will do by their actions is vastly similar. And what we know is both of them are actually very soft on illegal immigration. We're going to have a Democratic-led Congress and a Democratic-led Senate that are also soft on immigration. And we're going to get ourselves a president who's soft on immigration. So we know that the immigration problem is going to become worse, not better. Let me be clear as I talk about this. The guy that walks across our border, comes and stands in a day labor camp, and goes out and works in the burning sun for 12 hours a day for less than he should be paid, I don't really have an issue with him as an individual. I have an issue with the system that's put that man into that position where he eventually brings his extended family over here, and that extended family continues to live off our services while he actually produces something. And that is what is going on. Make no mistake about it. The other side of this, though, is this nationalized health care, this socialized health care. Now, I know that a lot of people think this is a wonderful thing, and they look overseas and they go, look how wonderful it is in England. In England, you can go to the doctor for free, and everybody can go. Yeah, here's what I want you to do. Before you believe that, go find yourself about 10 people from England that have lived there for more than a year, you know, lived there for a long time, have got to go to the doctor routinely, and ask them how great it is. Ask them how well it works out. Because I have a young man from England working for me, and what he told me is, he says, yeah, you can go for free there, but I get a lot better care here. So, I don't want to go into that. I just want to point out before you start, you know, lambasting me with how great socialized medicine is, that, you know, you might want to go there and experience it for yourself and then come here and experience it for yourself here if you haven't been here before you make that determination. Don't just believe what the TV and the talking boobus Americanas on it tell you, because it's not the truth. I don't care where you live. Those people on TV do not have your best interest at heart. They want to entertain you and manipulate you so that you'll watch their channel instead of somebody else's, because that's how they get paid. All right? So don't forget that. Now, how do these two issues fit together? Well, they fit together like this. What we're going to see is a continued strain on our services, fostered by, you know, what ranges between 13 and 30 million illegal aliens in this country who are all using our services and paying very little into them. Most of these illegal immigrants are paid in cash, and the ones that aren't are using somebody else's Social Security number because there's no system for them to work legally. They are sending vast amounts of the money that they earn back in many instances to their home countries. In Mexico alone, the amount of money that's sent back by illegal immigrants in the United States to Mexico exceeds the entire gross national product of the country of Mexico. So you have a system where this group of people is feeding on the system that, don't blame them for it, that we created, that our government has created. And at the same time, you're going to throw in national health care that's supposed to pay for everybody, so that it's going to get easier for those people, these illegal immigrants, to drain our system. And at the same time, we're going to have numerous Americans go, well, I'm not buying my own health insurance anymore. Now, don't get me wrong. I think we have a real problem with the way health insurance is priced in this country, and a lot of it I just make illegal, because this health insurance system has created a pig trough that the doctors and the hospitals and the drug companies are feeding on. And when I went to the doctor back in the 70s when I was a kid, we paid cash out of pocket. Everybody else did. We didn't have any problems. Prescriptions were affordable. Hospital care was relatively affordable. And health insurance was something that covered you when you ended up in the hospital for more than a couple days or needed a major operation. And that was that, and that was it, and that actually worked pretty dadgone well. But now we're into the situation where people believe that they have cradle-to-grave care bestowed upon them as a right, that everybody should get equal health care. So what I see happening is, one, we're going to see a massive load against the U.S. healthcare system fueled by illegal immigration, and we're going to see continued class warfare. Let me explain to you why these clowns up there are continuing to make this immigration problem worse, not better. They've run out of class warfare to wage. Most Americans are starting to figure it out and get along with each other. We don't have blacks and whites fighting with each other the way that we used to. Blacks and whites pretty much get along, as we do with all the other races. And so what they've done is they've turned to, well, we can't really go after the Muslim American, because frankly, right now, there's just not enough of them to really institute this thing. And everybody on the left is going to spin it back as hatred. So we can't really get any kind of momentum going with that. People just don't really see it impacting their daily lives, even though it is a problem, trust me. All right, you go to certain parts of Michigan and certain parts of Texas with large Muslim communities, and you're going to see that they're starting to form their own little, you know, I hate to use the word, but slums, where they completely control everything. They have their own school system. They have their own everything. And they, you know, that's going to become a problem in the future, but it doesn't work today. It's a pawn on the chessboard. But the illegal laborer, specifically the Hispanic illegal laborer, you see him everywhere you go. So this makes an excellent pawn on the chessboard to misdirect American people's attention. So what you're going to see is this might work a little better than they have planned, and you might start to see some real breakdowns in society centered on this issue. When somebody takes their kid to the hospital who's seriously injured and has to wait behind 20 illegal immigrants, that guy just might get pissed off enough to start turning some stuff over or turning some people on their heads in the emergency room. And you might start to see some riots like that. These two things together are a powder keg, folks. Don't think they're going to go away just because people stop talking about them from the negative standpoint. They're going to get worse. The system can't handle the burden that would be placed by these two things. Understand that Barack Obama wants to spend more money on this national health care system than any other individual program in the government today, and we are already $100 trillion in the hole when you add up the two different sets of books that our government keeps. Alright, so we don't have the money. I'm sorry, it's not there. Because he's not talking about cutting spending anywhere else to allocate it, alright? He just wants to spend more. And that's just going to be bad news overall for the economy. And it's what's going to happen. And so that's a... sorry about the pause there. I got a police officer pointing a radar gun at me. I wasn't speeding, but... I always want to back off a little bit when that happens. So that's just another kind of cog in the works that people aren't really talking about, the way it's going to affect the economy long term. But that's the one you have heard a lot about. But I don't think you've heard about the future of it and how the future will impact us. And that's the price of oil and gasoline. Wherever you are right now, if you're inside, go to a window, look out. And unless you live out in the country or a small, quiet suburban street like that, you probably see a lot of cars around you. And we can have all these dreams of mass transit and electric cars and hybrids and all the things that we want to, but the reality is if you look around the arteries and veins of our nation, which are the highway system, our economy is fueled, run, driven by, and enabled by the motor vehicle. And we need gas to make that work. And yeah, people can ride share, people can do this, people can do that, but the majority of people that have those as options are actually using them today. Most people that do have a real option for public transportation tend to use it if it's clean, safe, and dependable. The problem is in a lot of places it's not clean, It's not safe, and it's not dependable, and it's certainly not safe. There are certain bus routes, what have you, that, you know, normal people just aren't going to get on because they're afraid they're not going to be able to get off on the other end. And I'm sorry that's the way that it is, but it is. And then you have clowns like DART here in Dallas who have built this huge train system that runs throughout our city that doesn't go anywhere from where people live to where people work or where people live to where people actually go. I mean, it would be genius if these guys built a line that ran from the Dallas-Fort Worth airport down to downtown Dallas, from downtown Dallas to downtown Fort Worth, and made a triangle and went back up to the airport and built off of that. We don't have one of those. There's no way to do any of those things with public transportation in Dallas-Fort Worth. And they're the ones that make the most sense. And in a lot of cities, they've done similar stupid things. One way or another, you just have to accept it. No cars, no economy. Now, last week I told you about a subsidy that is a private subsidy. Behind the door, I'm talking about subsidy that's been going on that no one's talking about in the mainstream media. Now, that subsidy is the fact that the oil companies and the gas companies have been taking some of the money that they should be charging to the American driver off the price of our fuel. And they've been pushing it over onto jet aircraft fuel and charging the airlines for it because I know the airlines have no choice. They have to buy it. That the American consumer is reaching a breaking point where he'll stop buying. He'll figure some way out to not get in a car anymore. He'll start working 4 days a week instead of five. Whatever it takes, he'll buy a moped. We're at a tipping point at just $4 price point. The problem is, as I've told you before, that system can't work forever because the airlines are cutting routes, putting more people on individual planes, using less fuel wherever they can, cutting weight, charging additional monies, and all the things that they're doing either directly cut fuel because they fly less routes, for instance, or carry less weight, or they indirectly are going to cut fuel because when they fly less routes, charge more money, more people don't fly. People are less likely to fly when they know they're going to be crammed into an aircraft where they can't move. They're not going to have an extra seat here or there throughout the airplane for a fat guy to sit in. Okay? And then it's going to cost them more. And they're going to have to pay for their back. So all these things are making people go, you know what? I'm going to either go a short distance trip I can drive to, or I'm just not going to take a trip this year because the economy sucks anyway. So the airlines are going to use less and less fuel. Well, once that happens, and it's already starting to happen, the only place they're going to be able to do is turn back to the American consumer. And we've seen the oil price come down a little bit recently because, you know, people are using less gas. That's the reality. The supply and demand thing works, but it can only work so far. Because what's going to happen is we're going to reach this point where the average American can no longer cut his fuel consumption any further. The oil companies can no longer subsidize it any further. And the world demand for oil is going to continue to go up. Because in these countries like China and India, where people that do have transportation have mopeds and whatnot, they may use less per individual, but a billion people on mopeds uses a lot of gas. So that world demand is going to continue to go up. And we're going to eventually have to see gas start to go up further. And the problem with that, the big problem with that, is we've already reached a tipping point. The very fact that you saw the oil companies realize, hey man, we have to do something here because we're going to put ourselves into a bad place if we go up any higher with our gas prices, that tells you that we're at that tipping point. Unlike the government clowns, these guys have their, you know, their profits is what they're worried about. And they took out the slide rulers and ran the spreadsheets and figured out, we got to stop this thing here. And if you want to see the impact of that, you know, everybody's talking about how much money the oil companies and the gas distribution companies are making right now. You know what? Don't look at the profits refineries are making. The refineries' profits are in the toilet because of this maneuver. That can only last so long as well. They're going to have to start charging more to do refinement, and the price is going to go up. Because we've seen these steps in our economy that tell us that we hit a tipping point, because we saw that, we know that that was that tipping point. That was kind of the straw that, you know, really, like, $5 gas, we can't do it. It doesn't work. And what I'm telling you is, sooner or later, we're going to see it. And we've already, the market's kind of established for us that the American consumer here is at its breaking point. So that's another thing that I think is not being talked about, not being understood, not being appreciated, And I think it's pretty easy for the average person to go, hey, man, if fuel goes up another 20%, what does that mean to me? Over where it's already gone. And the answer is it means bad things. It means I've got to make some very tough decisions. Some of those tough decisions are yet another domino. I'll talk about that in a minute. Another one of the dominoes I got from this report that was sent to me on this mixed story is commercial real estate. We don't really hear a lot about commercial real estate right now. But the problem is more and more of these neighborhoods are starting to turn into kind of ghost towns. People put their house up for sale because they can't afford it anymore. All right? And no one buys it. And eventually they just walk away from it. It's in ruin, my credit. I don't care. My credit's already ruined. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to keep trying to keep this thing going and wait for you to come throw me out. I'm going to go find me an apartment somewhere that's cheap to rent. I'm going to move to another part of the country where I can get a job. I'm going to do whatever I have to survive. And maybe if my credit's not totally screwed, I see it coming, and I'm going to go bail and do something to enact a new standard of living for myself before it's destroyed. And then you can do whatever you want to it. I don't care. That's what's happening. Now, as that happens, a lot of these commercial locations are seeing a downturn in business because there's less people there. You go and you put a commercial building in place, you look at a lot of things. Well, some of those are the demographics. What is it like around this building? Who's there? Who shops there? Who buys there? Who works there? All right? And what you're seeing is since that demographic's changing, you can't support as many of these commercial locations. And I've been seeing signs incentivizing people to come in for like 2 months free rent for their first year and really big, beautiful commercial buildings right here in North Dallas. There's a huge sign right down by Central Expressway and LBJ here, which is 635 and 75 if you want to look it up on a map. Gorgeous, beautiful building. Any company would be proud to be located in it. They've had a sign up for 2 years that says free rent. Now, how long can that go on before you start to see failures in the commercial real estate market? I think it's not much longer. This report seems to indicate the same thing. And as that starts to happen, the kind of the golden egg that has been supporting these financial institutions, this bright spot of commercial real estate, you know, it's going to start to come down too. That has repercussions that ripple through the economy. I'll let you kind of think about it for yourself on how that really affects everything. The next one is what I call China rising. You might want to call it China and India rising. And this is going to affect the fuel price, but it affects a lot more. And the reason I focus on China over India is it's not just the global demand that increases. The problem we have with China rising is for years and years and years during the Cold War, we wanted two things. We wanted the Soviet Union to stop being communist, and we wanted the Chinese to stop being communist. To a degree, we kind of got both of those. The Chinese economy today is not a communist economy. They still have a very socialist government. I call it a communist government still today. You still end up in jail for voicing your dissent in the wrong place in the wrong way. But when it comes to an economic vehicle, the Chinese have married socialism and capitalism in a very effective manner, in a very effective way. In other words, this goal we had to capitalize China, we've succeeded, and maybe we've done something we shouldn't have. Because when over a billion industrious, intelligent, hardworking, devoted people set their mind to competing with you in the open free market of the world, that's a problem. And that's what we've got with China today. Trust me, China is our friend, and they are also not our friend at the same time. In ways that they are not our friend, I'm not talking about political and saber-rattling and, you know, what kind of missiles they have and everything. I'm talking about just economically. They're going to need more oil. We're using more oil than anybody else. They're going to want a piece of it, and they're going to make moves to leverage themselves into a place where they can take some of it because they need it. When it comes to competing with them, all you environmentalists out there that are trying to save the planet and worry about carbon footprint, you want to worry about a carbon footprint. You look at China's growing carbon footprint. You look at the true waste, the pollution, the disgusting nature of what's being done with industry in China because they don't have the regulations they do. If they need more power, they just fire up another coal generation plant. They bring in coal. They just start burning it. If they need something, they do it. They haven't reached a point where they've become concerned with and protective of their resources the way this country has. The problem is you've got a billion people that are willing to do anything to beat you. And we've got 300 million Americans who are becoming willing to do less and less and less to survive, let alone beat somebody else. We're not worried about being world leaders anymore. Let me explain where I see this. China is what America was in 1946 today. Not with freedoms, but with the mentality of the people. When our boys came back from the Pacific theater and the European theater, America stood up and said, we can do anything. We will make this place better. We will be world leaders. We are invincible. We have power. We have capacity. And we will build, innovate, and engineer. We're going to change our nation and make it something even greater than it's been before. And a lot of that's been lost to apathy with our new generations. They look and they go, the dream isn't what we believed it was. And in many ways, they're right. That a lot of what we've done has been a disaster. I'm explaining kind of in the last, I don't know how right they are. But China doesn't see it that way yet. So what we know is that mentality works really good. Short term. We've built a nation that we envisioned. We had our problems in the 70s. We had our problems in the 80s. We went through the Vietnam conflict. We went through the Korean War. We went through these little side skirmishes. We went through terrorism. We had hostages. All right? We had all these problems. But America became a financial giant unlike anything ever seen before in the world. Able to make dictations and policy throughout the world in ways we never should have been able to. But we were able to do it. And we did it because that mentality, that collective belief in a society works. We've lost it, but they have it. The next 50 years, you're going to see a China rise that you can't imagine. Because they figured this capitalist game out, and they're pretty daggone good at it. And they're going to continue to grow their population, they're going to continue to grow their consumption, and we owe them trillions of dollars, which means they have us by the short hairs. Because as they start to call in debt on us, if they stop pegging their currency to ours, they can elicit tremendous financial control over the United States. All right? That's the reality. And in business, and these guys are good at business, folks, you do what it takes to win. That's what we're going to see coming out of China, and that's a problem. The next one that I see is investment withdrawals. And I've kind of alluded to this before, but I'm going to go over it again because I think it's important to understand. See, our stock market and our economy is fueled by investment. The companies that are out there making products here or anywhere else in the world that are U.S.-based American companies, they do it with your money that you invest through your 401k into a mutual fund or what have you. They do it with everybody's money. That's how capitalism works. People are not given a piece, but they have a right to buy a piece of the economy by investing in the companies that choose to openly sell their stock publicly so they can raise more funds to do more with what they have. All right? That's how our economy works. Now, so long as that investment looks good to people, as long as people are willing to keep putting their money there and, more importantly, leaving their money there, that system continues to grow. It almost can't fall down unless these summies do stupid things like voodoo with the dead, like we're talking about in the beginning here, and that's been going on. Because of that, the profitability of these companies is waning. When the company does look profitable, it's only a matter of time before it comes out the other side that they were doing some shady bookkeeping, and there was no profit there, or the profit wasn't what they said it was. So since they're public and they didn't disclose it, and they overpaid a dividend, now the money's gone. So one way or another, all of these things are starting to bite these companies. This debt and this declining economy and these voodoo accounting practices are just starting to pop up left and right. We're realizing that Enron and WorldCom and Tyco, back a few years ago, those were scratching the surface. Those were making an example out of some people so that you could let the shell game keep going on in the back. But people kept digging, what's going on here? It's a freedom in our society today that even individuals in government that want to do the right thing are finding out what's going on. They're uncovering it. As they uncover it, people like me, and people like I believe many of the people that listen to my show, are taking our money out of the stock market. Okay? I think collectively we're a relatively small amount of people compared to the whole. But we do have an impact, and more of us are getting smarter about this and saying, you know, I'll invest in certain stocks, but I'm only going to invest in companies that I know can't hide what they're doing, that pay a good solid dividend, and I'm going to move a lot of my money into the commodities market, or I'm going to move it into just safe assets. I'm going to put some of it in gold. I'm going to do all these things to diversify my portfolio that I talked about last week with financial advisors. Okay? So that's happening. That's one piece. The bigger piece is that we have millions and millions and millions of baby boomers hitting their retirement years that are going, I can't risk my money anymore. I've got to put my money into safe investments. I've got to go into the bond market. I've got to put some in cash. I've got to do these same things. Those people have a much bigger impact. So I think you're going to see massive amounts of investment dollars pulled out of the United States economy over the next 10 years. It has to happen because these guys that are, you know, 65 years old now can't afford to have that $800,000 nest egg being risked in the market. They've got to put it somewhere a lot safer. That's what they're going to do. And when they do, that upward pressure on the market is going to come down. So that's yet another thing that the government's not talking about, the media's not talking about. No one seems to be talking about this, but that's a fundamental reality. And a lot of the things that I talk about are pretty hypothetical, but I think seeing baby boomers pull their money out of the market isn't hypothetical. It's just, it has to happen. That's what their advisors are going to tell them to do unless they completely sell out. And we are seeing some of that marketing shift I've talked about already there. But I think most people are just going to go, you know what, I'm 80. I can't risk this. If this goes away, when they reach a point where they go, okay, I'm 80. If I live to be 100, I'll be lucky. If I spend my money now, X dollars a year, and if I'm sitting in a bank account even at 2% interest, I can live to be 100 years old, and I know I'm going to be all right. Or I can keep risking this thing for more money, and I'm reaching kind of the end of my life cycle, then I'm not going to risk winding up my last few years in some low-rent nursing home because I can't afford to take care of myself anymore when the safe bet now will take me all the way to the end. That decision is pretty easy to make, and it's going to be made on a massive level over the next 10, 15 years as these people hit their retirement age. They want to buy a big Winnebago and cruise around the United States. Can't do that anymore because they can't afford the gas. So they're going to figure out some way to live those golden years the way that they've planned with this money all of their lives, and they're going to safeguard that money. And the more they start to live that retired lifestyle, the more they're going to fear losing what allows them to do it. So they're going to make a shift in that investment. And now, here's the biggest domino of them all. The one that I think can result in the biggest downturn of our economy in the history of mankind, and will eventually save us at the same time. Common sense will kick in. Look, folks, unlike these companies that keep playing voodoo with the money, the average American reaches a point where if they can't do this anymore, they can't go further into debt, they can't keep spending, they can't do the what they've always done, they can't just pretend it's all going to be okay. They've got to stop. They've got to reach a point and go, no more, I can't do this, I'm going to cut my fuel expenses, I'm going to cut my grocery expenses, I'm going to cut my housing expenses, I'm going to pay off my debt, I'm going to safeguard my investments, I'm going to do whatever I can to live my life in a way where I can support it with the least amount of money possible. And I'm going to make more than that, but I'm not going to try to live the American dream of earning $200,000. I don't need it. I'm going to create a lifestyle that's sustainable with $50,000 a year of household income that lets me live the way I want to live. All right? That lets me live a good life under my definition. Not some guy on Madison Avenue's marketing spin's message about what a good life is. I know what a good life is for me. A good life for me is I know my kids can grow up and find a place to live and be able to afford to move into a place when they're still young. They don't have to stay home till 30 to save up enough money to buy a house because I've let the real estate market go to hell. All right? They're not going to have to, take out the lifetime of debt just to go to college. We're going to have money saved up so that they can do that. I'm going to live a life where I can make sure that there's food on the table every day. And if we stop working for 6 months, there's still going to be food on the table. I'm going to figure out how to make my land produce. I'm going to figure out how to live in a place where they don't tax me into oblivion. I believe that common sense is kicking in for America right now. It's the reason that my show's taking off the way it's taking off. It's the reason when I go out and research these topics, I can find masses of information about it. I can find individuals all over the place. I can find a family growing food in Southern California, producing 10,000 or 6,000 pounds of food on a fifth of an acre. And the guy that does it says growing food may be the most dangerous thing in the world because when you start growing food, you might become free. I can find that spirit in our country today. That tells me common sense is coming, because there's a point at which it has to. There's a point at which it doesn't matter if you don't want to do it, you're going to be forced by circumstances into doing it. No one's going to loan us any more money at a certain point as an individual, or you're going to just realize, I'm $40,000 in credit card debt. This has to stop. I can't do this. And I'm 45 years old. This is crazy. Or, I'm 24. I just got out of college. I owe $100,000 worth of student loan debt, and I've got a Visa card for $24,000 on it. I can't do this. More and more people are going to figure it out. And what that's going to do is it's going to cut spending like crazy. And our economy is fed by spending. And 10% of Americans figured this out. And start preserving and building and protecting wealth. And that, you know, that wealth protection sandwich that I talk about. Preserve, build, protect. Start living with that mentality. See, intrinsically in us, as Americans, the words of our grandparents and our parents and our great-grandparents play in our heads. A dollar saved is a dollar earned. The one little line of Shakespeare they knew, neither a borrower nor a lender be. Okay? These things, these common sense, the best way to double your money, fold it in half and put it back in your pocket. Don't risk what you don't need to. The oldest proverbs and parables, the ant and the grasshopper, so I think I might do a whole show about the ant and the grasshopper and how it applies today. Okay? The story of the ant and the grasshopper. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Don't let greed lead your decisions. These things are in us. And when we figure it out, and we're figuring it out, it's like going to the doctor where he gives you some medicine and says, let me tell you something. You got a bad condition here. This will cure you, but it's going to get worse before it gets better. Because when you start taking this, it's going to make the disease rage, and then eventually it's going to die. Well, that's what's going to happen in our country. When these people, our fellow Americans, figure this out, and we all start to curtail our spending. An economy that's fueled by spending, aggravated by these other circumstances, is going to fall. And it will come out the other side, and I believe we will go into a period of prosperity that we've never seen before. We'll see more people living the way we did 50 years ago. Smart, intelligent, and building and saving their wealth. But we're going to have to go through this disaster first, because the current system is built not on tax and spend like all these politicians like to spin it. It's built on borrow and spend. And that system has to end. And since the system's built on the spending portion, when the spending stops, it has to crash. That's why I advise you to find a place for yourself that you can live as affordably as possible, that can produce something for you, even if it's 10 to 20% of your food needs. Alright? A place where you're not taxed into oblivion. Have plan B, have plan C, have food reserves. That's why I advise this, because sooner or later, I believe that this has to happen. Will it be next year? I don't know. Will it be in 10 years? I don't know. Will it be in 20? I don't know. Personally, I don't see it lasting another 10 years before we have this big smashdown. I see it being maybe 18 to 24 months. We're going to see a drop like we've never seen before. But I could be wrong. It doesn't matter. If you do these things, you follow this common sense wisdom, if you live with the wisdom of your grandparents, you have a better life, even if times don't get tough. That's the wisdom of the ant and the grasshopper. That's a bird in the hand versus two in the bush. That's what it's really all about, folks. So I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. It was a long one, but I had a lot to cover. And I really wanted to make sure that I talked about this FAS 157 thing. I'm going to put a lot of links to this post. So go by the survivalpodcast.com and look at some of the links and resources I'm going to put out there. And remember our listener appreciation contest. Help me grow the program. Go by the blog and register. And you could win an iPod Nano or maybe something else. And we're going to run that program. I'll put full details out there. Thank you again for tuning in, and I hope you have a great day.
You can scream and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.